Unlabeled Leadership is a volunteer service. We appreciate our guests for their stewardship and remarkable stories. We also appreciate listeners like you who back the show with star reviews and contributions.
Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. This is episode 135. We are broadcasting a special episode entitled Don Kirky and Ajay Pankajkar on Zelensky's Leadership. Here's a shout out to listeners from the Bronx, New York, Window, North Carolina, Westchester, Ohio, Springfield, Virginia, and Cedarburg, Wisconsin. This episode goes out to the people of Ukraine. Our hearts, thoughts, and prayers are with you. We do have listeners from Sebastopol, Ukraine, and we hope that all of you, like the rest of the people in Ukraine, are safe. We have several listeners from cities in Russia. I don't know if they hear this episode or if they'll ever hear another episode, but our hearts go out to them as well for what they're going through. I do have one request of you, the listener. If you value what we're talking about, please share it on social media. I haven't requested you to share episodes before, but consider sharing this one. With that, let's get started. Ajay Pankajkar has been in episodes 3 and 38, and Don Kirky has been in episodes 29 and 32. In episode 41, they both appear together. Don is the principal consultant for Trinity Creek Group, and he is an associate graduate faculty member at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. Ajay is the president of Central Knowledge. He is a professor at Sprott School of Business. You could read more about them in the show notes. Ajay had suggested that I would have someone on the show to talk about Zelensky's leadership. Much to its surprise, I invited him and Don Kirky. You're about to hear our opinions based on live broadcasts from Zelensky, Putin, as well as from the free press. In this episode, we will talk about three characteristics or aspects of Zelensky's leadership. Part 1. Lead by Example. While much of leadership is based on what we say, a large part of it is based on what we model for other people. In other words, what we say and do and act and behave affects the behavior of the people around us. Ajay begins by contrasting Zelensky with Putin. Here's Ajay.
War in Ukraine and the invasion by Russia is a tragic event happening in our world right now. One thing I noticed was the difference between the two leaders, between Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky, where Putin, from my perspective as leadership, is looking as is more of an ego issue, I think, at this point. A person in a leadership role of a dictatorial leadership role where he has pretty much, from what we understand, everything in the world that he needs, including the permanent rule of a country. Where do you go from here? So it becomes more, in my opinion, of an ego issue where he's trying to expand his empire. He's got nothing left to do but continue to build his ego. Whereas Zelensky is more of a selfless act. He's trying to defend it for his people. And maybe not just for his people, but it might be selfish in the sense that he's defending the interests of a country he believes in. And while that sounds a little selfish, it's actually selfless because he's doing something that we would consider in certain instances, a patriotic duty where we're looking for the best interest for our population, especially as a leader of a country. You're looking for the best interest of your population. So in my opinion, what's going on here is one leader is looking in terms of ego, so selfishness, whereas the other one is taking a role of being selfless in their attempt by remaining in the conflict and not fleeing. The U.S. offered him sanctuary. He says, I need arms. I don't need a ride.
Yeah.
That one sentence sort of reflected his attitude, which resonated with the world and especially with the people in his country. It shows a sense of action, selflessness. I don't know how to describe it, but it's really interesting because I asked myself, if I were in that position, I hope none of us ever are, but if you are fortunate enough to be a leader of a country and you're in that position, what would you do? And I answered it saying, chances are, if I'm honest with myself, I probably looked for the ride, not the arms. You know, I mean, it's human nature, you know, the fight or flight kind of thing. Maybe I would have stepped up. I don't know. I don't think so. It just shows the quality and integrity of an individual like Zelensky and just those simple words of defending what's best for his nation his people and probably ultimately himself. And I don't think in his mind he wants to go down as a martyr. I think he's just doing what he believes is right. That's a selfless act.
One of the seven principles that I talk about is put others first. Zelensky is very much doing that with his people, even at the risk of his own safety and health.
It's interesting that you put it that way because he is. It's one of your principles that you talk about, Gary. It's a leadership by example role. He's doing this and it's his people are looking at him and saying, well, we should do the same. If our leader can lead by example, we need to follow him or her into that battle. You're sort of listening and echoing what's going on out there. So it's one of the principles you have to do best in light of others. It's a principle I follow when I manage people. I never go out and tell people what to do. I actually do it. And hopefully people see that and they action it. It's something that really is nice to see, where we're very cynical of politicians and leaders.
The stark contrast you see between Putin at the end of a long table in a palace and Zelensky wearing a flak jacket and walking among and talking to the soldiers and to the people of Kyiv, just stark, shocking, and to my mind, visually powerful. You've touched on a couple of things. Appreciate the strength of character. And Gary, you said he's doing what's right. And one of the things that's called to mind is an older book these days, Jim Collins' Good to Great, talked about leaders of organizations that became great were passionate, humble, but focused on the good of the organization. And if you swap out organization and say country, I think in Volodymyr Zelensky, we are seeing a leader who is passionate, realistically humble, but deeply passionate for his country. And it is a good reminder in the midst of all of this that his mother tongue is actually Russian, not Ukrainian. Yet he is allied himself with the people of Ukraine, with all that that means.
Part two, the courage to do what's right. There are many manifestations of the concept of courage. One is described by Kim Campbell in episode 95. Another is described in my book, 9 Practices of 21st Century Leadership, in the chapter, Face the Unknown Like Lions. And then there's the more traditional meaning of courage, which is what Don and Ajay discuss. To begin, here's Don.
It is common in leadership studies these days to ignore the individual and focus on the system. There is real power in systems and in systemic structures. But I think when we look at Volodymyr Zelensky, we see the equal power in a single person. When I think about him, he's being compared frequently to Churchill, but I also think of Gandhi or Martin Luther King. These are people who stood up with real courage against the flow and made a profound difference. And I think the courage of a single person leading by example can't be underplayed. I meet people from time to time who have this kind of fatalism about them that says, I can't make a difference. I'm just, and then they fill in the blank with, I'm just a supervisor, I'm just a manager, I'm just a director, I'm just a vice president, I can't make a difference. There is incredible power in a single person having the courage to stand against the system and do what is right. I am enheartened when I look at Zelensky.
Don makes some very valid points here. We're talking about Zelensky, and it's one of these very visual, world-encompassing examples. For me personally, the term courage is always meant to do things that nobody else wants to take on or to make decisions about things that are unpopular. Because it takes a degree of decisiveness to move forward with those kind of things. Because if nobody else wants to take it on, like in this case, a war, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't think even the President of the United States is trying to say everything to avoid getting into any type of world war conflict with the Russians. To take on the courage to say, I need to step forward and lean into this, not knowing what the outcome is going to be, is really impressive because I think that happens to a lot of us in our workday lives, especially if we're leading a group of people. Don brings up a point about focusing on systems over people. I've always taken the other approach. The systems can be improved. As Don says, we need to focus more on people. And when you do that, you actually instill a sense of leadership. So you take on things that pain them, like that cause them consternation in their work life. And you try to move that boulder forward, whether it means that you have to take it up to higher levels or get into positions where it means that you're risking your own reputation to do what you believe is correct for your team, yourself, and the department. That takes a lot of courage. In this case, Zelensky is actually doing that. As Don says, you know, the term organization for me is not just a company. Organization is a collective group of people getting together to achieve a certain goal. A country is an organization. Zelensky is moving this country forward into an area that most of us would never want to wish this on anybody or even step into it. When you have to answer the call, could you? When it comes to war, I don't know if I could, but when it comes to conflicts in the workplace or issues in the workplace, I know I can because I've done it. And I don't know what the outcome is going to be, but I know I'm stepping forward for the right reasons. And I just don't step into it for the glory or the need to be right. I step into it to having the evidence that I'm approaching for the right reasons. Now, whether it comes out the way I want it to, that's another issue. I went into it for the right reasons. I'm supported by evidence. And Zelensky is doing exactly that. He's actually going into these situations with the evidence, a sovereign nation being invaded by another country. He's trying to stay out of the fray when Putin is accusing him of different atrocious things, Nazism, for example, or chemical weapons and all this kind of stuff that they're accusing Ukraine of having. He's stepping above the fray, which I can't say for a lot of us as human nature, we would want to sling the mud back at them. And he's not. He's like, let's just look at the facts. This level of courage, the structured process that he's taking and the intelligent and logical reasoning he's taking to courage, to me, is quite impressive. All these elements put together just shows the type of lessons that we can all take away even in our daily lives.
This is hard, and I don't want to underplay just how hard it is to stand against a system, stand against the flow, stand against what, in Zelensky's case, is an enemy that is much stronger than him. This does take incredible courage. This is incredibly hard. But at the same time, at some point, you have to look inside yourself and say, am I going to do what is right in this situation, or am I going to do what is convenient? I don't want those of you who are working in jobs that you don't care for or in organizations you don't care for because you need to care for your family. I don't want you to feel bad, but I also recognize at some point all of us in our careers are going to have to make that tough call. Am I going to do what's right in this situation, or am I going to do what's convenient or what's expected of me? I applaud Zelensky for doing what is right and what is needed in a really difficult situation, a horrendous situation.
You know, what's interesting, Don, that you bring up is what's right. When we talk about what's right, that's highly subjective. Putin, in his mind, he thinks he's right. I hate to bring this analogy up, but even in World War II, Hitler thought he was right. When you're in your own mind and within your own reasoning, you think you're doing the right thing, and how to define what right is a highly subjective reasoning. We know that the whole invasion is wrong, but it comes down to how do we know what's right? That becomes a challenge. And of course, it's legal and moral ethical issues that guide us accordingly. At the end of it, once that's all done, do we know if we're doing the right thing within the face of courage? And that's always fascinated me.
In the United States politics, one thing that I notice is that there's people that govern by survival and power and doing whatever they can do to stay in power and to do whatever they can to stay in power. Then when you switch over to this concept of courage and doing the right thing, it doesn't happen often. But when it does happen, there's a high risk that you will not be reelected. You will not be able to participate anymore. You could be ostracized for standing up to injustices. It's a different concept of courage and one of real leadership when that happens.
I think it speaks to the systems influencing that sense of survival. Because when you look at the U.S. political system and how people feel they need to stay into power for whatever duration, the systems are putting in place the mechanisms to keep them in control. The lobbying, the funding, all this kind of stuff that go in that influence the leadership and the direction it takes and influences society. You're right, Gary. When somebody stands up to speak to courage, to do the right thing, especially in the U.S. politics these days, you're demonized. It's usually funded by the systems. It takes significant amount of courage to stand up and do the right thing in the political environment that is the U.S. right now, and even in Canada to a certain extent. you're starting to see that influence. To do that and get people to follow you seems to be insurmountable in the environment the U.S. is in right now politically. And if a war did break out, let's say in the U.S., and somebody did try to invade it, would people coalesce together? Theoretically, we would say yes, because U.S. has always been very patriotic and do what's right for country. In this environment, with the system set up, would they be able to stand up and recognize what is right, first of all, and have the courage to admit that, and second, have the courage to fight for it? Speaks a lot to the systems that are influencing the outcomes here.
Ajay and Gary, I want to play on what you were talking about. There's two other things that I think you have to couple with courage. So courage alone is insufficient. And one of them obviously is intelligence. Courageous and stupid is incredibly dangerous. The other one that I want to focus on is integrity. Integrity is partially honesty. The other element of integrity is consistency. One of the things that we are seeing, frequently see in politics, is a lack of honesty and a lack of consistency. So if my party does it, it's good. If the other party does it, it is bad. That's inconsistent and fundamentally dishonest. In addition to courage and intelligence, we are looking for integrity that is honest about the situation. And I, you know, if as we circle back to thinking about Zelensky, he is not whitewashing. He is not acting typically like a politician for whom everything is sunny, even when it's raining. He is being brutally honest about the situation. He is consistent in his messaging, and he is also courageous. And I think that combination has real power.
That integrity, Commandant, is at the heart and soul of all of this. I was just watching recently a 60-minute segment on election integrity in Wisconsin and how the Republican lawyers and parties are still fighting that the election was fixed and rigged and all this kind of stuff. And the person leading the electoral votes in Wisconsin, I don't know what the title is, but the person who was elected based on a Republican House in Wisconsin twice. She was nominated and confirmed by that group to lead a bipartisan group to count this. Now the Republican Party is saying that she's corrupt. She was interviewed saying that, no, these are the 10 steps we did to verify everything. There has been no corruption into this. And now they're threatening her with criminal action. But where I'm going with is that it showed a high degree of integrity for her, even though she was elected by a certain group of individuals, to stand up and say, hey, this election has been processed with the utmost respect within the legal boundaries and verification processes to take place to confirm that these are correct. Which shows the integrity and the courage to face the masters that put you into place. You know what I'm saying? Like, it speaks volumes to what you just said, Don, the integrity part.
Part 3, relatability. How do you interact with other people? Are you authentic? Are your thoughts and words congruent? Do you talk down to people? How do you connect? In this part of the conversation, we talk about relatability. To get us started, here's Ajay.
I was reading an article about Zelensky, and the way he's relating people is on a very human level. There was an area in Ukraine that was bombed that, as a young man, he used to go to bars and enjoy himself with his friends. He related it in those words that, you know, this is where I spend time with my friends, and it got destroyed. He was connecting with people on an emotional level. And emotions, of course, as we know, logic is reason. Emotions drives passion. The emotion part, when you connect that EQ side of things, when you connect into people's feelings and relatability, it engages people. You're not saying to them, this is what makes sense. Here are the steps to take. You're saying, no, here's the emotion I want to draw out of you. And that's what he's doing. He's speaking to the people in terms like he's speaking to your buddy. When we get together, when we're on a podcast, the three of us, we laugh and joke and we speak, you know, in fun terms. And we, you know, sometimes make fun of each other and we relate to each other. I mean, he's not doing that to that extent, but he's actually relating in a way that people can understand and appreciate. He's not talking with platitudes like Don was saying before, as a politician would. He's not talking with big terms and multisyllable phrases. He's just saying, I'm a human being. This is what's happening and we need to engage. He's making it a way in his communication that creates empathy. It creates alignment. It creates relatability. there's a lot of things happening in his communication. He's never spoken in a way he feels that he's better than you. He's speaking to you in a way that he is you. That's saying a lot to his leadership style and how he's engaging people, to the extent that people from other parts of the world, even from Canada, there are soldiers who, of course, the Canadian military says, well, we can't protect you if you go there on your own. We're not going into this battle. But if you're going there on your own, you're allowed to, but we can't protect you under the Geneva Convention. They're going in to fight for the Ukrainian people on their own volition. Think about the power that this communication has from Zelensky and how he's doing it. To me, it's impressive. And I wish I had that ability because, you know, you could probably move mountains if you can communicate in those terms in a very relatable sense.
You'll notice when he speaks, when he is on video, he is not dressed up. He speaks in a khaki-colored t-shirt and occasionally a flak jacket. He almost never speaks from the chair that is legitimately his in his office. The few times that he has, it is just to make the point that he's still there, not to assert his authority. He doesn't need to assert his authority. He naturally speaks to it. One of the things that struck me, Ajay and Gary, is when he spoke to the British Parliament. One of the masterful things that he did was to echo back to them Churchill's famous speech where he was encouraging the UK to fight. Those of you who have seen the movie The Darkest Hour will recognize that speech. Zelensky masterfully echoed that speech back to the UK Parliament as he was talking to them about what he and what the Ukrainian people would be doing. This truly is a masterful communicator, and I am really impressed. Back to our conversation a little earlier about integrity. He speaks very naturally, very capably, but he does, as Ajay has been saying, speak also from the heart in a way that is powerfully engaging. There is not a lot of artifice in the way that he speaks. It sounds exactly like what you would hear from a friend that you respect and care for.
It's that relatability, right, Don? I mean, you just said it. He could have said a lot to the British Parliament, and they would have still applauded him and gave him a standing ovation, but it may not have resonated as much. He's speaking to the Canadian Parliament coming up soon. I wonder what he's going to say there. He's probably doing a bit of research on what our great leaders have said. Our famous predecessor, father of our current Prime Minister, Pierre Trudeau, once said, just watch me. You know, and that was like the three words that sort of echoed and went down in history in Canada because he called in the military to enact certain things here in the early 70s. That relatability, because the way he did that, right? I mean, he used Churchill. And of course, Churchill means a lot to a lot of people around the world for what he is and as a leader. But for the British people, that's going to the heart. That's almost speaking to a religious intent in the sense that, I don't mean it in a literal sense, but if you speak to Churchill's words, that's an underlying and a defining moment for the British people that really stuck at home. You know what I'm saying? It just really planted a flag there that really made people think, especially the politicians and the UK. And that's the power of words, right? I mean, Shakespeare once said, pen's mightier than the sword. Words are much more powerful if you use them in a way he's using them in a very contextual sense and making people engage with it. And he knows how to choose his words.
One of the other principles is connect with others. And I think this is a point both of you are making, is that he knows who his audience is and he knows how to connect with them both intellectually and emotionally. He adjusts what he says to resonate well with his audience that he's speaking to.
Putin's communication is more of a command and control, right? Do as I say. He's executing orders and expecting people to fall in line. And we hear, allegedly, you know, some Russian troops not fully convinced that this is necessarily the right thing to do. They're not necessarily fully bought in. They're following orders, but you get the feeling that some of the troops are not fully bought in to this fight. If you had a Zelensky communication ability, if Putin had that, he may have gotten away with some of this stuff. If you communicated differently, so where you have one side talking command and control, Putin, you have Zelensky engaging people and making people like me or you and countries volunteer that, yes, he's right. We're not being told that he's right. We're volunteering that, yes, he's correct. And we're making the choice. We're not being told to make the choice. That's the biggest difference between how both are communicating and getting buy-in from people.
What Putin is communicating is not necessarily what his audience needs to hear and what would help his audience. There's a huge disconnect there. So yeah, I completely agree with you.
One of the things that comes to mind, I guess the analogy is Putin appears to be speaking from the throne.
yeah, that's so true.
And there's a danger for any leadership in speaking from the throne. And it is a reminder that we are living in the 21st century where the power is in a persuasive use of the current media. And the current media does not handle speeches from the throne very well. It handles Volodymyr Zelensky's approach much better. So he is man on the street, out in the street, talking to people in the subways, in the office, all of these things naturally, persuasively, passionately. When you contrast that with Putin, who not just sounds like he's giving a speech from the throne, but sounds almost robotic in his lack of passion and engagement in the way that he presents things, the contrast is stark and powerful.
My thanks to Don Kirky and Ajay Pankegard. If you'd like to learn more about Don and Ajay, go to the show notes. And if you have a question or comment, go to unlabeledleadership.com, click the message icon, and leave a voicemail message for up to 1 minute. I'd like to thank those who contribute to the show. Your contributions makes a difference because this is an all-volunteer service. I'd like to thank you for listening. This is Gary DePaul. Until next time, lead on.